Welcome back to the Extension Experience Podcast. I'm Dana Zook. I am recording on campus this week in the Animal Science Department, and I'm joined by Dr. Paul Beck, one of our OSU Beef Extension Specialists. Paul, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me, Dana.
Yeah, I got Paul early this morning to talk about a new supplement that has become available across the state in a conventional supplement lineup. So we're seeing it on the board at the feed store, along with your 20% cubes, your 37s. It is a distiller's grain cake or cubes. And so it's been available in this new format for about 5 years. Distiller's grains with solubles. So listeners will refer to them as DDGs, but that's what it refers to, is dried distiller's grains with solubles. And Paul's going to help us define what this product is. So it's been available for about 5 years, Paul. I've dealt with it, being from Nebraska, really since I started a school at Nebraska. But this form that it's provided in as a cube or an extruded cube, that's kind of a new thing. So could you tell listeners a little bit about what distiller's grains actually is?
Well, distiller's grains have been around for hundreds of years, coming from the ethanol industry. Usually we associate that, or we used to associate that only with whiskey production or other libations of that sort.
Right.
They were just a locally available product in most cases, very highly available in the Kentucky region, Tennessee, those types of areas where there's a concentration of drinking whiskey production. In the 90s, there's really a big increase in the production of ethanol for fuel. Huge industrial complexes put together for that, and they put those where the corn is. So, as you said, in Nebraska, it's very highly available. So the distiller's grains with solubles is what's left over after the fermentation process, the distilling process, where most of the starch is removed from the corn. They process the corn. It goes through their distilling process. It uses up a lot of the starch that's in there. All the other ingredients, the protein, the fiber, the fat, because we're removing the starch, all those increase in concentration. And also there's some spent yeast and some other products that get wind up in there. Knowing the process that is being used, they're working that process to create the most ethanol they can. So it's not uniform from batch to batch. They're using their technology to create ethanol as their primary product. So there may be more or less sulfur from the sulfuric acid that they use to halt the fermentation process at a certain point. You know, there's just different variables that go into that. Most of what we see in Oklahoma, especially as we get out of the panhandle of Oklahoma into the main part of Oklahoma, would be a dried distiller's grains. In the feedlots in the panhandle, there are some modified or wet distillers that make it into those feed rations. And the shelf life of the modified, which is about 50% moisture, would be longer than a wet distiller's, which is about 30% dry matter, which would only keep for, you know, just a few days. So you have to have these truckloads turn over quite a lot. And we're hauling a lot of water, and that's why we don't transport those long distances into most of Oklahoma. And that's why we see where to expand their customer base, they dry those down to about a 90% dry matter or 10% moisture basis. So what we get as the dried distiller's grains with solubles is a yellow to slightly dark brown powder that's fairly small in particle size, and that leads to some problems when we're feeding it in range conditions. Pretty much my thought is you have to use a feed bunk, or else you're going to lose a lot feeding it on the ground, especially in really sandy areas. But, you know, they will lick it off the ground quite a bit. But I've seen 10 to 25% loss estimations trying to feed it on the ground in a loose format. Also, it's really easily blown by the wind. So as we get into western Oklahoma, we have sand and we have wind. So it will just blow away as we're pouring it out of the bag. So these cubes, historically, the regular cubing process does not do a very effective job of making a really nice cube or a very stable cube or hard cube to feed. They wind up breaking up and causing a lot of fines and really not a very good quality product. So about 6 years ago, there's some companies that started extruding distillers' cubes and using an extruding process kind of out of the plastics industry. So they took this technology, started using it with these cubes, and they make a really nice, stable product. One of the first conversations we had with the owner of one of the first companies, Master Hand Milling, that had a facility in Lexington, Nebraska, he said that they think they're seeing an increase in protein, increase in energy, and an increase in fat content as they go through this extrusion process.
Like the availability of those components?
The measurable content of
okay.
It. And the group of nutritionists here at OSU, that's a head scratcher.
Yeah, I know. I'm scratching my head right now.
So one of the first things, and he was interested in sponsoring some research, providing some product. So I had a graduate student come to me out of Texas A&M, Jordan Adams. And one of her first projects was to take some loose distillers that were going into their process. And then from the same lot of distillers as closely as we could get the cubes coming out of the end of the process. We did this over several days and different times, day and night, and we collected all their pressures and temperatures and stuff at their processing facility. And we did find a slight increase in crude protein from 33 up to about 34%.
Okay.
A increase of about 1% in fat from right at 8% to right at 9%.
Okay.
And a decrease in fiber levels.
All right, Paul, you're going to have to explain this. I don't know how that's possible.
And so when we calculated our TDN, our total digestible nutrients from that, it went up from 90% TDN to 93% TDN.
Okay.
We dug through some literature, and there's some work out of Brazil and in China where they're using low quality products and using pressure and heat through a explosive air decompression chamber. But you know what they're doing is applying pressure and heat to these low quality products and increasing the digestibility, decreasing the fiber, and essentially the heat and pressure combination disrupted the NDF. So that, we think, is what's happening with this extrusion process, because it is a process where they're not applying heat, but the creation of that high pressure as it's going through that extruder increases the temperature of that product. So we feel that's why we're seeing actual increases in the nutrient composition of the distillers after the process.
Very cool.
It's a really neat process.
Yeah.
And it makes a very stable cube. And we feel when we're feeding it to cattle on pasture, this really increases the suitability for feeding cattle in especially large pastures situations where we may want to change grazing distributions to different areas of the field. We don't want to, on a range situation, bring cattle to the same place and feed necessarily every time.
In a bunk, you're saying. You don't want to bring them. But that does cause some disruption to the grasses and that sort of thing in that area.
Yeah, so, you know, if we have our water in our feed bunks and everything right there, we can always, you can do it visually, or you can go and evaluate the species, and there's just a range where you have a very degraded range composition very close to the water and the feed source where it gets better as you get away. That just shows they're overutilizing right there where you're feeding, and underutilizing areas away.
So listeners, if you heard Paul say NDF, that's neutral detergent fiber, that affects our digestibility. So high levels of NDF mean it's less digestible. And so by reducing the NDF, then it's more available to that animal, digests pretty easily. So just a definition there. But yeah, especially native grasses, native short grass prairies, that's what we've seen in several areas of where you've done your research, really affected by trampling, overuse in those feeding areas. So tell us a little bit about some of those specific studies and where you've done them in Oklahoma and what you've seen as far as performance of these calves. And you're using mostly stalkers, right?
Yeah, mostly stalker cattle on these research projects. And I know there's a lot of this being fed to cows. And I've got some thoughts on utilizing that.
Okay.
So the second trial we did with Jordan was actually measuring how much reduction in intake we would get as we increase station level. We had some heifers here at Stillwater. We individually supplemented daily from non-supplemented 0.2% of body weight, 0.6% of body weight, all the way up to 1% of body weight. As we increased our supplementation rate, for every 1% increase in supplementation, we decreased hay intake. This was a moderate quality Bermuda grass hay at this trial. We decreased that by 1.6% of body weight. That equates to about half a pound for each pound increase in supplement rate.
Okay.
And so we didn't see a positive associative effect with this Bermuda grass. It's, you know, 10% crude protein Bermuda grass. So we wouldn't expect to see an increase in hay intake at that first level where we're correcting some crude protein deficiencies. Oftentimes with very low quality hay, very low quality range in like dormant native range, it's low in protein. We'll see as we add crude protein supplement, that first one, that first level, pound or two a day, we see an increase in forage intake and an increase in total intake and increase in digestibility. Whenever we get into forages that are over 7% crude protein, we don't see those positive associative effects. So we tend to more to replace
forage
intake with supplement as we increase supplement level.
Okay, so that's what you're saying, that moderate quality Bermuda was probably the best maybe forage to apply to that first trial.
So it wasn't the best to try to find a positive associative effect on hay intake. This was a model for us to use for subsequent trials where we're looking at feeding the supplement to cattle on green and growing forages.
All right.
So we did a series of stalker cattle trials, growing trials, at Haskell at the Eastern Research Station on Bermuda grass and at Fort Supply at the USDA Range Research Station and the Rolling Sand Hills up there north of Woodward, and also at the Clemmy Range Research Station at Bessie, Oklahoma, there south of Clinton. So we pretty much, you know, covered the state with the extreme differences in forages that we see across the state with these supplement trials. The Bermuda grass and tall fescue blend at Haskell there south of Tulsa was extremely well managed. We looked at a fertilized pasture with no supplement, a fertilized pasture with 2 pounds of supplement per day, and then a higher rate of supplement, 0.75% body weight, which would be about 4 pounds for a 500 or 600 pound calf to replace the synthetic fertilizer. So it was unfertilized, but we had a higher supplementation rate.
Okay.
We saw a really nice increase in performance with those. That Bermuda grass was from about 15% crude protein in the early summer down to about 12%.
So still really good.
Really good.
Yeah.
And we still saw a gain response with these cubes.
Okay.
Bermuda grass and tall fescue at that time of year are notoriously low in energy.
Yes.
So, you know, the calves on no supplement gained 1.7 pounds a day in the early summer and a little bit less than 1.5 pounds per day in the late summer. We boosted those gains up to close to 3 pounds per day.
Oh, wow. That's great. Just with that small package supplement.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, is it kind of like the Green Gold program? Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what we're doing here.
It would be very similar.
Okay.
Now, these supplements, they don't, as a rule, don't blend a whole lot of minerals in with it or ionophores or anything. Mm-hmm. So in all these trials, we had a Stocker style supplement with Rumensin or Bovatec offered free choice to all cattle in all treatments.
Okay.
So this is above any response we would see from the ionophore.
Okay.
The even with that nice gain response, the supplemental efficiency pound of increased gain per pound of supplement offered was still close to 4.5 or 5.
Okay.
So what we would expect to see from offering an energy supplement to cattle grazing.
Okay. So kind of a typical response.
Response for those types of, of forages.
Okay.
As we moved into western Oklahoma, we did some trials where we looked at an increase in supplementation rate from 0, 2 pounds a day, 4 pounds a day, or 6 pounds a day at Fort Supply, or 0, 2, and 4 at Bessie.
So what time of year was this, Paul?
This is during the summer.
During the summer. Okay, that's what
starting
I was thinking.
In May and ending in October.
Okay.
For these grazing trials.
Okay.
And what we found with that was, as you'd expect, a nice increase in gain as we increased our supplementation rates, a marginal reduction in, as we added more supplement, we may have seen a marginal decrease in response. So our most efficient response in most cases was in the lower supplement rates. Mm-hmm. And during the, we expect to see a really nice response in the late summer with those forages, but we saw about the same response in the early summer as we did the late summer.
Interesting.
In those. So, and range it for me is fairly hard to sample and get the estimated diet selected.
Right.
The quality of that.
Native range, yeah, because it can be variable. Lots of species.
Cattle are very selective in how they graze, and we just can't be that selective.
We don't know what they like as much. Yeah, so
absolutely. So, you know, our sampling showed fairly low crude protein content even in the spring, early summer, and fairly low crude protein content of those forages. The cattle on no supplement actually gained fairly well in the early summer, about 1.7.
Okay.
And whenever we fed the lower rates of supplement, for the most part, we saw the supplemental efficiency to be right at 2 to 3 pounds of supplement per pound of added gain. So a very efficient response at those lower rates. And, you know, I say for the most part, we did these trials over 2 years in 2 locations. And with the types of years we had, early summer and late summer, the responses may not have been, you know, exactly the same, but we did see some really nice responses to that supplement.
I hope you enjoyed this first segment of this discussion about supplementation of distillers grains on growing pastures. Tune in for our next episode for more details about Dr. Beck's supplement research. We will have more information and the second and final part to this discussion. If you have any questions about this research and would like more information, feel free to contact us at the contact information in our show notes of this episode. We also have an extension office in every county of Oklahoma, and those educators are more than happy to assist you in a variety of different areas. So keep that in mind. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great week.